Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61.
Wow. I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show. What's up, y'all? I have a great conversation to share with you today. My guest is a Super Bowl champion, a fellow girl dad, and got bit hard by the golf bug not so long ago. Excited to welcome on Victor Cruz. Vic just got to play Royal Liverpool ahead of the 151st Open Championship. So looking forward to getting his course notes. Let's get right to it. Well, I'm thrilled to have Victor Cruz join the Smiley Show. Big fan of Vic and all he did on the football field. But tell you what, I think we're seeing you pop up more on the golf course now more than ever. When did the golf bug start for you?
Man, it started about 3 years ago. It's my third summer now playing golf. And I'm just like, just completely dialed in. I got the bug, so to speak, and I'm just playing as much as I can. I'm playing with as many people as I can, playing recurringly with all friends and homies and all the guys that I play with. So it's just been great, both learning a new sport, right, and you know, having those challenges and trying to overcome those, and then also just the camaraderie, like with, you know, some former players, some current players that I've played with, against or with, and things like that. So it's been a fun experience overall so far.
Yeah, who's the one that got you hooked?
It was actually my daughter. So my daughter's been golfing since she was about five or six years old. She's 11 now. And it was a couple of years ago where I was like, you know, where I wasn't even into the sport at all. And then I decided to go watch her practice. And if anyone knows my daughter, she's like all over the place, rambunctious, like always wants to be the life of the party, personality. And this was the first thing that she actually like was quiet and was putting and was focused and was locked in. And I was like, this is the sport that makes you shut up? Like, why didn't I just this ages ago? So now she's 11 and she's competing in like junior events. I'm taking a golf camp down at IMG in a couple weeks. So like we're fully locked into this thing.
Man, so just being a father and having a daughter that's into the game, you know, you played football and you're still trying to learn this game yourself. How's it been trying to help her? Just, is it something that y'all do together that's been the most enjoyable part?
And the best part is like just watching her grow and watching the growing pains that we both had throughout the sport. So it's just, I think that's been the best part, is like just seeing her grow through it, seeing her challenge these ups and downs and get through them and cry and laugh. And like, that's the one thing about the golf course, is you can't hide from daddy for 4 hours. We got to talk, we got to have conversation, you got to have your roller coaster of emotion, whatever it is, but we're going to fight through that and come out the other end and be better. So that's one of the best things that golf just teaches all of us.
Yeah. My mom used to bring Skittles out on the golf course for us and made it a game for us to, first off, to get along with my brother, but also to try to enjoy the game more. If we'd made a putt or something, she would give us a Skittle. So it's something like that. That's like enjoyable. But I also, I have a daughter too, 6 months. So she's not quite into golf yet, but I'm hoping that she eventually will enjoy it like your daughter does.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's just a matter of keeping her around it, man. She's going to live and breathe it through you every day. She's going to see it. I'm sure she's already got her first putter already. Just waiting
she's
for
dialed.
Like, you know what I mean? Fully dialed in. So the more they just grow up around it. And then it's funny because towards me, she'll never tell me she loves it. But whenever she's like challenged competitively by her peers or her friends, she like turns up like, oh, no, I actually play golf. Like, this is, you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, oh, okay. So she actually she likes this. She enjoys the competitive aspect of it. So I know there's a little golfer in there, which I love.
I love that so much. And she got you into it too. And so give me the Mel Kiper Jr. breakdown of Victor Cruz's golf games, strengths, weaknesses, handicap. I just want to hear it all. Just so I just saw your golf swing right as you got on, and you make a pretty nice move at it.
Yeah, I've been working at it. I'm a 12.5 handicap. You know, I'm great. Short game and putting is definitely my strength. Getting off the tee box has been a bit of an issue, but we're starting to correct that. We're starting to get, you know, read some fairways and be in play for shot two for our approach shot. So it's all coming together, man. I think it's just a matter of the more I work at it, the more I'm out there playing, the more I'm getting those live reps. Because on the range, I look like Tiger Woods, let's be very clear.
Oh, don't we all?
On the range. And it was so crazy. I got the chance to play in the Invitational, the Open Invitational at Royal Hoylake, which those guys are playing this week. And I was hitting balls, right? And then I hear like a gunshot go off next to me. And I'm like, who is that? And it's Hideki Matsuyama. And it's just, every ball is just crushed. And it's like 30 feet in the air. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like this is, okay, there's a difference level between where I am and where these professionals are and the levels that they play at. It's just night and day.
Had you ever played or seen a pro golfer hit a shot before? Was that the first time?
No, I have. I actually got fortunate enough to play with Rory at the Pro-Am last year.
Okay.
And got all to right, do
so you've seen
things.
It.
So I've been around. I've heard it. But it's just, you know, every guy is different. Every guy, I mean, Rory's swing was by far, that was the first time I saw a professional swing in front of me. And to have it be Rory was like, okay, this is a different level of golf, different brand of golf that I'm seeing here.
I mean, are you so dialed in that you type in YouTube and you're looking at Rory McIlroy golf swings and you're trying to figure out what he does? Are you that far along, or you just go out and play?
On YouTube, bro, I've screen recorded Rory's swing, Justin Thomas's swing, Jordan Spieth's swing, and I look at it and I drag the back and forth in slow mo so I can see the angles, the head placement, the knee flat. Like I'm looking at everything, getting all the information that I possibly can. And then on Instagram, I mean, I just said the word golf 16 times. My entire Instagram feed is going to be golf swings now when we go back. So it's perfect.
Man, you're a golf nut just like the rest of us. So when you see their swings in slow-mo and you're looking at it, what do you see in their swing that you're trying to get more in your golf swing right now? What are you working on?
I think it's for me right now, it's just ball compression. Like how do I just flush the ball and keep that same consistent ball strike each and every time. And I think that's the difference is that like, yeah, I can hit it one time every, you know, for the most part, I want to be able to create that consistency with my golf swing so that those approach shots, I think my approach shots are the worst part of my game. It's like I can get off the tee box, but when I'm 180 out, 170 out, 150 shot, like, somehow I just either don't line it up right or my aim is off. So I watch aim videos all the time. I'm starting to train with the aim stick and doing that whole thing. So it's that part of it. But ball compression is number one right now.
Ball compression. Okay. So that's kind of learning how to lean the shaft a little bit or just wag the club. Okay. I feel you there. And mm-hmm. short game, that mm-hmm. doesn't surprise me. That's one of the things I think guys pick up the quickest, but definitely the more you play, it sounds like you're realizing, okay, I got to get better at this now. It can be overwhelming. You know, there's just so many things in golf that you got to work on.
There's so many different swings. Do you want to hit a draw? Do you set up for the draw? You want to hit a fade? You want to hit a stinger? Put it in the back of your stance. I'm watching Jason Day talking about the way he chips is that he doesn't move anything. He just goes from one. So it's just like, and then I see other chips. Even when I was at the Open, I'm seeing chips with a lot of wrist hinge. And I'm just like, well, which way do I chip? Like, I don't know which way to chip. Is it both? Do I need to master both? Somebody tell me which way is the right way. So yeah, I can figure it out. You know what I mean? But I think if you find a way that works for you, then it works.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's about getting, you know, as much information as you can, but sometimes it doesn't work for everybody. So it sounds like you're kind of figuring it all out a little bit. And football and golf are so different, you know. It's just like polar opposite as far as the sports go. You got a loud environment versus a quiet environment, a team aspect versus an individual competition. I mean, how do you draw the similarities kind of between the two?
I think the obviously a completely different sport. And I think where it comes into play is the mindset. I think you still, you know, I approach golf rounds sometimes or most of the time like I do football games. Maybe not as high intensity, but I go in with like that self-talk of like, okay, it's a new day, it's a new opportunity to break 80, break 90, or go low and just try to like play our best round of golf that we've played to date. Like, you know, have that self-talk and then start, depending on where you're playing, start to like, I always visualize myself like making par, hitting the ball left, getting down that fairway. Like I start to envision that as I'm walking up to the course or as I'm about to play. So I think mentally preparing for each of the sports is definitely similar. And then just maintaining a temperament, right? You're going to hit a bad shot. You're going to, you know, fly a putt sometimes. It just happens. So it's about maintaining your composure through that, because as we all know, as I definitely know, once I get angry over one bad shot, the next four shots are done. The whole next hole is completely finished for me. So I got to make sure I keep that resolve and keep that calmness and continue to trust my swing.
Yeah.
I think that's the part I'm at now. Is like, all right, you messed that up, but your entire swing isn't broken. Continue to keep swinging your swing and good things happen.
So when you hit a really good shot, where do we bring out the salsa dance?
I've only
like,
said,
is it a big putt? Is it a pulled out bunker shot? Like, where do we draw in the line here?
It's only eagles and birdies. So eagles and birdies is when we bring out the salsa for sure.
I mean, somebody on tour needs to bring out the salsa dance. It's just, you're so recognizable, but man, that salsa dance, you burst on the scene so quickly in the NFL. And I think that salsa dance made you just so recognizable and different, you know, like what's the story behind that?
Yeah, I think it was just a cultural thing, man. You know, like I'm half Puerto Rican, half Black. I grew up with my grandparents on my Spanish side and my mom, obviously. So my grandmother, you know, I was born pretty much dancing all of these dances. My grandmother taught me each and every one of them in the living room. Much to my belief that I wanted to learn these dances. I didn't want to at the time. I was a kid that just wanted to play outside. And she was like, you're going to love me for this later. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And then fast forward, I make it to the NFL and I have the opportunity to like do a signature thing or have one of my coaches insinuate that like, you should do something to represent your culture, your heritage. And I'm just like, coach, what do you want me to do? So he was like, you'll know. He never told me to dance. He never told me to do anything. He was just like, when you get in there in the moment, you'll just know. It'll just be instinctual. And I was just like, okay, cool. Not thinking that I was going to get my first start on that third week of the season. And I was just trying to catch the ball from Eli Manning and not get cursed out and make sure I live to fight another day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And turns out first catch I have is a 65-yard touchdown up the sideline. And I was just like, well, I got to do something now. And immediately salsa dance just came into my brain. Because it just embodied like swagger, my cultural background. It was also like making everyone in Philly upset, which is always great. Like it was just all those things culminating. And it was like, I got to do this. It's the only way to celebrate this touchdown.
It's amazing, man. I think fantasy football was kind of breaking out during the time, at least when you were playing. And I remember I picked you up pretty early in that process, and I feel like I won the league that year because of you, because you scored so many long touchdowns. I feel like you would always rack up so many big yards, and you were the guy that everybody wanted on their team. And so thank you for that.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Annoying? Was fantasy football annoying for players? Was that something that just you got or tweeted about all the time? I can imagine that'd be pretty frustrating at times.
Yeah, for sure. It used to be, I mean, not annoying, but you just take it for what it is. You know, you'd be driving around or you pull up to a restaurant or venue and be like, man, you put up. I mean, thankfully, I was, for the most part, on the right side of those conversations, thankfully. But I know, but at the same time, I would get the, yo, man, you're great this week. You gave me 27 points, but you got to talk to about Bradshaw. You want to give me 11 this week? Like, they do that. You know, they do the contrast thing. So, but yeah, I mean, every game you go into it and you just like got to hear about the fans and different angles of what they want you to do and how much better they want you to be. It's like, this game's already hard enough. Like, don't put an additional thing of me having to get you a certain amount of points every week for you to be my friend and continue to be my fan. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to take you back just a little bit, being undrafted to the Giants. man, where was your head at when you showed up with the New York Giants getting drafted, or excuse me, signing with them and going through that process? You know, where was your level of doubt? And did you really believe that you were going to be a star in the NFL one day?
It's interesting you asked that. I remember right after the draft, and, you know, for those that don't know, after the draft, free agents, they get a call from their agent. So their scouts are the representatives from these teams call these agents on these players that they would want to have on their roster throughout the training camp or give them an opportunity. And they tell them that they're interested. Your agent now garners these phone calls from these respective teams, calls you and says, hey, here are your options. These are the teams that have free agent deals waiting for you. And it was Washington, Seattle, and the Giants. Never forget it. And as soon as he said the Giants, I was like, oh, John, done. Like, I didn't even count to see how many receivers they had. I didn't even look at it. I mean, I also had a chart. I was a junkie through the draft. I had a chart of all the receivers from every team that were in the draft, where they went, how many receivers these teams already had on their roster. Like, I did that whole thing to see where I fit in. And I went back and looked, and I was like, oh, man, they got eight receivers. They got eight receivers on the roster already. But I was just like, you know what? It's in my backyard. I'll be home. If I make it here and it doesn't work out, I tried my best here at home. And it wasn't until I got into training camp and I started making plays. And I'm doing different things. I'm just like, wow, this is coming to me fairly easy.
Did it surprise you?
It absolutely surprised me because, I mean, I came from a 1AA school, so I was already like, I need to go above and beyond here to let them know that I belong, you know? So I was just going hard. Like, I didn't know anything else. And for me to be doing some of the things I was doing, I was surprising myself, but I didn't even have time to, like, think about that or think about what I did yesterday, because tomorrow was just as important as yesterday. You know what I mean? So it wasn't until that first Jets game in the preseason where I was like, okay, I think I could do something in this league.
Yeah, I mean, you had three touchdown catches in that game. What do you credit that to in training camp in the preseason, being able to, you know, get off to a hot start? Was that from your time in college? Were you coached well? Or do you think it was a product of being in an environment where you just know you had to push yourself to be able to make it almost back against the wall?
I think it was all of that. I think it was me coming out of high school, not having the right grades, having to go to prep school, taking the SAT score there, finally getting into UMass, you know, flunking out twice for academic issues, and then being hungry enough to stick with it, get back into UMass, finish with a 3.0 GPA, become an All-American, have an opportunity to go to the NFL. But it was always those mishaps and the hunger to stay in it that prepared me, I think, for that moment and prepared me to be like, okay, now you're here. There's no other distractions. There's no school. There's nothing else you need to do. You need to just focus on football, focus on your playbook, figure out what it was you needed to become better and see where the chips fall. And I think it was that mindset of the things that I went through and overcoming them, being like, oh, this is the easy part. Like, now I get to play football and not think about anything else.
Yeah.
This is great. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, you're exactly right. And I think everybody kind of has their story as a pro athlete of how they made it, whether you're, you know, Tom Brady or whether you're somebody else. You know, everybody's got their story. And I think you got to have skill. You got to be talented. That's one thing. And then you need an opportunity. And then you need a little bit of luck too. And if you kind of combine that recipe together, then success can happen. And you just got to be able to know when that is and take advantage of it. And so in 2010, that was your first year with the Giants and you get hurt. Where was your head at going into 2011, knowing you're like, God, I got my break. And then it's like, just that had to be frustrating.
It was definitely frustrating, especially because the following training camp, I didn't have the greatest camp. Like I didn't have the same, you know, insane camp that I did my rookie year, which was tough to do in itself. You know, that's always not going to happen every year, but I knew that I was like, I just got to keep working hard. And then in hindsight, finding out that I was inches away from being cut that second year, like inches away from not being on that team. So understanding that and then them putting a fire up under me, right? I distinctly remember making the team that following year and Coach Coughlin bringing me up to his office right when I made the team, right after that first practice. He said, after practice, come up and see me. And I was like, okay. And I go upstairs to go see him. And he says, hey, man, you need to, you know, you didn't have a great preseason this year. You need to go improve yourself, or we got some guys on this waiver wire that we're looking at. And that was the most blunt, like, adult thing that I've ever had to go through. And I was just like, okay. And I went out to practice, and they brought in Brandon Stokely. I'll never forget it. And to me, it felt like a slap in the face. It was like, okay, you guys don't believe in me, don't believe in what I can do. Okay, here we go. So there were some injuries to our receiving corps. Marvin Manningham got hurt, and then I was the only guy there that had been there long enough that knew all the plays that they trusted mm-hmm. enough to play in the game. And then that first game was against the Philadelphia Eagles in week three, where I had, two touchdowns, 100 yards, and the whole thing. So that's when it, like, started to flip, and then finished the year off with a Super Bowl. I mean, you can't draw it up kind of any better than what it was.
So yeah, 1,500.
It's pretty magical.
1,500 receiving yards. What was your relationship like with Eli Manning?
I was incredible, man.
Instant chemistry?
Instant chemistry. We hit it off right away. A lot of people may not even know this. Like, during the lockout, I was one of the only guys that were staying in New Jersey, and I was local. And he would call me to go to his Hoboken home and be in, like, a dog park playing catch, like throwing balls. He's like walking me through certain things, certain plays, things he likes. Mind you, I'm an undrafted free agent, and he's just walking me through things and just making sure I'm prepared and what I know about the offense, and just keeping me up to speed, which I know also helped him just continue to say those things out loud and reiterate those plays and help him understand them even deeper. And that, I mean, he doesn't even know this, but those moments helped me incredibly, because for this guy to take this time out and do this with me meant a lot to me. And I was like, I got to go out there when I get my opportunity and reward him and pay him back for it somehow. But I already knew all the things he liked from a quarterback perspective on the football field so early on that I kind of had a leg up on a lot of guys going into camp.
That's so interesting. And I would have never known that, but it doesn't surprise me, because y'all had such a great chemistry. What do you think he liked the most about Victor Cruz as a wide receiver?
Oh man, I think the fact that I would take short passes and go a long ways with them, I think he liked that a lot. But I think the most part is a lot of our offense was predicated on my body language and him having to read my body language, have all of these option routes, and knowing that if the guy was on my inside leverage, I'd have to break out. And if the guy was on my outside leverage, to break in, or if they were too low, I'd go straight and run right by. So he, you know, it took a while to kind of get that together, because it's a very, very tough offense. But once we got it down and started to visually see the field the same way, I think that's when we saw the type of chemistry that we had and going into winning a Super Bowl together.
So you're just standing over, like, before the ball is even hiked, and you're just sitting there looking at the defense, and y'all both know, like, touchdown, like, you see the field, 100%. You both know it. That's chemistry.
There's a play in Washington where, I mean, this is for the game too. This is fourth quarter. It's like under 2 minutes left. I think this is RG3 year. So he had just threw a touchdown pass to Sonoris Moss in the corner of the end zone. And we're like, man, we got to come back and score. And I remember lining up and being like, okay, we have a specific play where if that safety is under 15 yards and I have this specific option route, I can run right by him. And I distinctly remember lining up and looking into Eli, and him looking, he was looking at me like eye to eye right before the ball snapped. And he didn't even make any gesture or say anything. But the fact that he was looking at me let me know, like, it's going down.
It's going down.
I was like, it's going down. And then I ran right by him. And by the time I ran by him and I looked up, the ball was perfectly placed. And I just caught it and it continued to run into the end zone and touch. And it was like that for a majority of our time together, just understanding exactly where I was going to be and being there at the right time.
Eli Manning's a big golfer. What, you got any good Eli Manning stories that just your favorite that just sticks out like a sore thumb?
Oh man, my favorite one. I mean, there's so many, especially Frank ones. But my favorite one is that.
I played golf with him once.
So if you ever play with him again, ask him about how he got his hole in one, because okay. He hates telling this story, because apparently he hit like it, like shanked left, hit a tree, bounced off a stump, hit the green, and like went. So
it's not even real.
He's like, he doesn't count it. He hates it because he doesn't count it. I'm like, bro, that's a hole in one. It's actually an even more special hole in one. You should. I brag about this to everyone. Are you kidding?
Oh man.
But he doesn't love it because it wasn't done in the most traditional sense.
Oh man, that's incredible. Man, so you play in a Super Bowl, and I've always wondered what the psyche is for a guy that, you know, it's coming off of, you know, the NFC championship game. You got 2 weeks off before the Super Bowl. And then I can imagine the day of the game, it just probably feels like it takes forever to get to the game. And typically in big events that I've played in, it's same for golf. It just seems like it takes forever to get to the tee time. And then the day goes by so fast. How are you able to kind of manage that day before the Super Bowl? And then when you got out there, also not too far ahead.
It was tough, honestly, because, you know, I'm a 24-year-old kid. I'm sitting there in the hotel room. We're going through that week of practice, and you just want that day to get there. You just want that moment to just happen already. You want to feel what the energy feels like within a stadium where the Super Bowl is being held. You're playing in it. All the little wild childhood dream things are coming to fruition, and you kind of, you know, you want it, you kind of want to sit and relish in all of it throughout the week and kind of take it all in, but you want to get to that game because you know how much is riding on it. People are going to be watching, how much your family's already here ready for to watch you win and things like that, and how much they sacrificed for me to even be in this position that I'm in today. You know what I mean? So it was, you know, the night before was tough because you're watching ESPN, you're talking to the fam, you're talking to all your homies, you're trying to get some, you're waking up in the middle of the night, you're like rereading your plays a million times to make sure you got the scheme down pat. And those were probably the most flawless week of practice I've ever been a part of at any of my career. We didn't make any mistakes. We didn't drop a pass. We, to the point where our coaches were in the meetings afterwards, like, guys, there's nothing to critique. Like, you guys are fully prepared for this game. Like, it's time to go out there and just play. And we got to the game, and, you know, you just look around. Michael Irvin on this side, and Phil Simms on that side, and Lawrence Taylor running around, and Joe Buck's doing the game, and Troy Aikman is mic'd up, and Steve Young is running around the field with Jerry Rice. And, like, you just know this is a different game than any game you've ever been a part of. And then to go out there and win it and to score a touchdown in it and to, like, have a dramatic ending, you know, it's just like, I can't believe it.
And to beat the Patriots, that'd be pretty sweet.
It's just the cherry on top, my friend. It's the cherry on top.
Chef's kiss. Chef's kiss. All right, who's the best defensive back you ever played against?
Ooh, best defensive back I ever played against, too, is Patrick Peterson.
Go Tigers.
And Darrell Revis. First of all, you got to be smart to play the game of corner, right? You got to understand tendencies. You got to be extremely athletic. You got to understand different route combinations. You got to understand, you know, 3-by-1 sets, what route combinations. There's so many things that come along with being a defensive back. So for me to line up at certain times, and for them to be calling out our plays, or to be calling out the things that we were doing pre-snap. Like, if he saw a motion, he'd be like, watch the toss, watch this. And about 80% of the time, he was right. I mean, he still had to stop it. He still had to, you know, do the whole thing. But 80% of the time, whenever he whispered to me, or whenever he said, oh, this is a run, or this is a pass, or this is watch slant corner, or watch slant fade, and I'm just like, and he was right every time. And Darrell Revis too, same thing. He would play this off coverage and be looking into the quarterback, watching you through the quarterback. And that's how he got a lot of his picks, because he would sit back and be like, okay, this is a 2-by-2 set. Well, they run slant out of this a ton. And he would see a slant and just jump it. And then either it's interception or a broken pass. And it's just like, how are you, you know, there's playing corner, and then there's playing corner to that level. And both of those guys had it at a high level for a long time in their careers.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Patrick Peterson at LSU, and it was pretty absurd. He was one of the best players that we had. He was there when I was in school, and he was ridiculous, man. He was a joke. I'm he's sorry you had to play against too. Him. Great yeah, dude. And he's a big golfer,
he's a
too.
Golfer. Yeah,
yeah, he's hosted me when I played in Phoenix a couple times at his house, and great dude. He's right. Speaking of a guy with the golf bug, that guy can't get enough of it. He loves it.
I feel though. I feel.
Yeah. And this is a question we ask for all of our guests that come on. It's what's the best play you've made on the football field, and against what's the best shot you've ever hit in a tournament or match setting in golf, and which one felt better?
Ooh, okay. Biggest moment on the football field was obviously, I mean, it's tough. It's the biggest moment. Well, there's two for me. The one is my very first touchdown catch in the preseason against the Jets. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just a moment like that will never, I'll never forget that feeling of that day. And then obviously scoring a touchdown in the Super Bowl was like, those two things are like neck and neck. And then the biggest shot I've hit in a tournament, I mean, I think it was the other day.
So you're still buzzing from it right now.
I got a hole in one. I actually have a hole in one from my first year playing golf ever. And it was the most awful shot, but it went in. It was elevated tee box. I kind of thinned it, but it kind of took off, landed short of the green, passed the hole up the backstop, came down directly into the hole. And I was just looking with my arms up like, I don't know what happened. Like, I know that a hole in one, but like, this isn't how it's supposed to happen. And everyone started jumping on me. I threw my club in the air. So to this day, that was one of the most like insane moments of my life. And J.R. Smith, I clown him all the time. Cause that's like my brother. And I was like, yo, you know, you've been playing for how long? Like 15 years and you don't have a hole in one? It's crazy. Like, aren't you like a scratch now? I was like, yeah. He's like, yo, just get away from me. Don't talk to me. Okay. He was so distraught when I had my hole in one. He couldn't take it. It's hilarious.
Hey, it doesn't matter how it gets in the hole. There's no picture on the scorecard.
There's no picture. I learned that first day ever playing a game of golf. There's no pictures on that scorecard, baby. However you get there, you get there.
What's your best round to date right now?
Best round to date is an 82.
Okay. And were you just buzzing 82. To try to shoot in the 70s? You're just...
I was just right there. And I tried not to look at the scorecard, right? Like, I'll put my score in, but I'm not doing any math. I know it's good. Like, I know I just parred a couple in a row. I don't want to look at it. But I'm just like, I'm on the cut. I know I'm right there from putting together a round that's like incredible and break 80 or just have a round just like hitting all my strides. I just got to stay at it. But I'm right there on the cut.
Man, like, yeah, looking at your swing and action, you're going to continue to improve. You have a lot of really good stuff going on in your golf swing. I haven't seen the rest of your game. We're going to have to go. Yeah. You and I will have to get on the golf course. I'll have to see it all and definitely can give a point or two here and there. But sounds like you're doing really nice with it. So speaking of the tour, as you kind of gotten more into golf, is there any specific guy that you like to watch on tour? I know we kind of mentioned golf swings earlier, but do you watch much golf on TV?
My TV is plastered on the Golf Channel. Believe it. Every time I turn my TV on at home, the Golf Channel's on. It literally goes from there to ESPN back and forth, and then a little Fox Sports morning to watch my guy Craig Carton. But there's no one. I'm just a fan of so many different swings and so many different dudes. Like Max Homa, I'm always rooting for. Rory, obviously, I'm always rooting for. Tommy Fleetwood, I just love his swing. So I'm always watching him. It's just pure.
It's so good.
It's just pure. Love Tony Finau. Mm-hmm. Just his story and everything that kind of he embodies, I love. Who else? I love Cameron Smith's putting. Like, just watching him putt is incredible. I mean, he does everything, but like the putting is just on another level. So just a little bit of everyone, man. Like, I just love watching all the greats. I want to watch all the good guys do it.
Well, I want to hear a little bit more about that experience that you had at Royal Liverpool. I'm currently here in Liverpool, part of the broadcast team for NBC. Really excited about the week. I've gotten a chance to see the golf course. But you mentioned earlier that you did play it this past week. So when did you get home? What did you think of the course? Just the whole experience.
I just got back 2 days ago. I mean, the course was incredible. And we got a tremendous day. Supposed to rain, it didn't rain. Got the sun for a majority of the front nine. Back nine got a little chilly, but it wasn't. It didn't rain, thankfully. But that course is just incredible. Just to be walking through Liverpool, and it almost feels like you're in this community that you're playing through. And then you get to 17, and you kind of see that monster, and you're just like, okay, this hole is gonna make or break this entire tournament this weekend. And guys, it's not gonna be easy. I hit a 9-iron short. I don't know why I hit a 9-iron. It's probably bad caddy in my opinion.
They come up in the bunker?
Yeah, definitely in that front bunker. And I hit a shot of the day, and it was just short into that bunker. And I was at 7-9. I'd be up there dancing right now. So, but that course is just beautiful, challenging. You got to stay in bounds to be effective. Like,
what do you think of the bunkers?
It's just a beautiful all-around course. The bunkers are insane. Like, I don't even know. I get in the – we had to hit a shot out of there. It was a scramble, but we had four poor shots, so we had to hit one out of the bunker. And I get in the bunker, and I look, and it's 2.5 feet over my head. And I'm just like, I got no shot for this. Like, we ended up getting out of there. Definitely a daunting up and down, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, what'd you think of the – you kind of mentioned the OB. It's very unusual for us to have – in course out of bounds, and we have that on the third hole and the 18th hole. That OB comes in tight. What'd you do on 3 and 18? Do you remember on those drives?
I remember 18 because we did our I hit my drive right into where the OB and the fescue meet inbounds, but just right on the cusp. And then my next shot was kind of like, because it angles in, so you got to kind of be precise on the next shot because you could still go OB. So it was definitely challenging. It's definitely weird visually too, to just
have yes.
all this real estate on the right side and it's OB. And just like, I can't, why did we do this course? It's hard enough. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's very weird.
But it was definitely, but I think I hit a 7-iron from there and got close. I think I hit it just short. Right. But one of my teammates, Jermaine Jones, who's a former soccer player, got us on the green. He had a tremendous shot, got us on the green, and we were putting.
Oh, let's go. It almost would be easier if it was just like a water hazard, you know, like if it visually, it would make it easier for my eye to see water hazard than just wide OB stakes. And it'd be so frustrating if I was playing and hit a shot out of bounds there and I see my golf ball right there and I have to go pick it up. And I'm like, I can play this. It's not out of play. That would be frustrating as a player, but.
And it looks like they mounted the fescue up to create mm-hmm. the boundary line and then left the flat green. It's just like, why? It was more work to do that than to just leave it alone and make the rest of it will be on the opposite side. But who knows?
It's going to be hard to believe that we're not going to have some drama on that 17th hole and then 3 and 18 with the in course out of bounds. There's just no way that we don't have something crazy happen. I feel like.
Yeah. And definitely 17 going into 18. If the match is close and we're coming down and guys are tied or a few strokes separate these two guys at the top, two, three guys at the top, we're going to have an eventful finish at the end for sure. It's going to make for drama, you know, and they got all, obviously it's a major. So all the guys are in it. Full Swing will be recording at all levels, the whole thing. And we'll all get to see it in its cinematic glory very, very soon.
What'd you think of the Netflix? Did you get a chance to watch the first season?
Of course. I was so glued to it. I was watching it in the living room. I was in Atlanta at the time, watching the first like two episodes, swinging my driver in the crib, like just like putting my arm in the slot of the house as I'm watching like Rory talk or something. I was like, something's wrong with me. I need
no, help. Man. It's right. I typically only practice my swings. I haven't done it watching Netflix quite like you yet. Mine are always in an elevator or when I'm picking up my bags at baggage claim at an airport. I just can't help myself. I just cannot help myself. It's terrible.
Don't blame you one bit. Don't blame me one bit, man.
The problem is I get to watch these guys week in, week out, and I keep on going back and forth between who I watched last and what I'm working on. So I played right after I watched Rory this past week at the Scottish Open. And now I'm trying to think, I'm swinging like Rory. Now I watch Scotty. Now I'm trying to do footwork like Scotty. And then I watch Tommy Fleetwood. I'm like, God, he hits his irons good. I got to have that three-quarter follow through like Tommy Fleetwood.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm just like you, man.
I love that, man. I love that. Especially Fleetwood, that ball compression, man. This, we were talking about it earlier, like, he's the one video I watch every time for ball compression. He's getting that contact down on that ball.
Yeah, it's really good. Was that your first time ever playing Lynx golf?
Yes, first time playing Lynx golf. First time playing in Europe, period.
Yeah. What was the impressions?
It was quite the experience. I did love, I mean, obviously I play a lot of my golf in the Northeast, New York, New Jersey area. And a lot of those courses are hilly, right? Just down. And like hills and mountains, expecting, but this was relatively flat. Like, it was some ups and downs, but not as much as like the upper Northeast and in the States. So it was interesting in that regard, but don't love the bunkers, obviously. But I did love the fact that it was pretty straightforward. Like, these courses, they're pretty straight up and down. The hazards are pretty visible. You can hit your spots. And I think once, you know, especially for these guys this week, if they're hitting their spots and getting up and down, staying out of those god-awful bunkers, they'll be all right.
All right. Give us your pick. Who's winning the 151st Open Championship?
I'm going with it's hard to do it back-to-back, man. I mean, just winning one a week ago, doing it back-to-back. But I'm going with Rory. I think if Rory can do it, he just came off a Lynx golf course with howling winds. So he understands how to play in those conditions. And this is no different. And like I said, if you can hit your spots in those conditions, which they're going to get rain, they're going to get something throughout this week. They're definitely not just going to play a clean round of golf up there in that area. So I think Rory can handle those conditions the best and maintain, you know, a good mental attitude throughout the entire round and come out on top.
Well, Victor, this is all I got in this interview, and I wanted to thank you for coming on. And definitely, when I saw your name pop up that you were playing at Royal Liverpool, I was like, this guy, I was like, I got to talk to the man that was just on the grounds, because I didn't get to play it. At least I can talk to somebody that's played it, because none of these players right now, they're all trying to get ready to play tomorrow. Nobody else wants to talk. I knew you'd be the guy to help us out and give us a feel of what we're going to be seeing at this 151st Open Championship.
No problem at all, man. Thanks for having me. Excited to see this 17th hole, how these cats try to figure it out and get up and down from there, make birdie, try to make par, keep going on to the 18th. So should be a great round of golf that we see, good brand of golf that we'll see this weekend. And I'm excited for it, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. We need to get on the link soon. I got to see this action up close, and maybe one day our daughters will be playing golf together. Who knows? This game will take you in some crazy places, and you meet a lot of people along the way. So thanks again, Vic, and we'll be seeing you soon.
No problem, man. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great chatting with Victor Cruz. Always love seeing an athlete from a different sport getting hooked on the game of golf. If you aren't subscribed to the feed already, make sure you do. We're going to have daily recaps of the Open Championship available here as soon as play concludes. Thanks for listening, and see you right back here after the first round of the Open.
The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.